A few sayings to get us going this evening. The closest a person will ever come to perfection is when they fill out an application form. Celia knows that. However long you agonise when you're having dinner over what dessert to have, there's one thing that's certain. When the person next to you desserts come, you wish you chose theirs. Don't you know that? And God made us a little lower than the angels, but most of us are concerned just to climb that little bit higher than the Joneses. So this evening we start our series on the Ten Commandments, and to keep us on our toes, we're going to be working from back to front. But I think it would be good as we start the series to remind ourselves of the commandments that God gave to Moses on Mount Sinai. So if you could turn to Exodus chapter 20. And we'll start reading from verse 1. I'm under strict instructions to be no more than 20 minutes, and I've decided we should have, you know, party conferences, they have little green lights when you're okay, and at sort of 16 minutes they turn orange, and when you get over 20, we go red. So I've got my eye on the clock. And God spoke all these words: I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above or on the in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of their fathers to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall do no work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Honor your father and your mother, so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his manservant or maidservant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. When the people saw the thunder and lightning and heard the trumpet and saw the mountain in smoke, they trembled with fear. They stayed at a distance and said to Moses, "Speak to us and we will listen, but do not have God speak to us or we will die." Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid. God has come to test you, so that the fear of God will be with you to keep you from sinning." The people remained at a distance while Moses approached the thick darkness where God was. So the final command is do not covet. And if you feel that you've not always kept this command, then I guess you're probably in good company. Adam and Eve, when they sinned for the first time, I guess you could say that they coveted something that they were not meant to have. And as a result of that, all that we have now are diseased worlds, our diseased hearts, if you like, are a sort of an outflow of what happened on that day. So that was the start of coveting, and it's happened ever since. And the world around us, are you guys okay there? The world around us tries to shape our lives, and there are many things that we can covet that we don't have. In fact, I looked into Wikipedia, you know, Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia dictionary thing, and when you type in covet, it redirects you automatically to the word greed. And you could say, well, coveting is an actual fact, wanting something that someone else has got. But when you think about it, that really is a result of greed. And the greed that is in our hearts. So So the root of coveting is really greed, and so that's what we're going to focus on this evening. And I guess whilst there are many things that we could covet in the West, in the very affluent West, the reality is that material and material possessions are the thing that we sort of can't avoid, that are there, and that so often we get sort of trapped into. And in many respects for us, in our lives, it's become very easy. You know, I wasn't around 50 years ago, but even 20 years ago, the expectations of people, I don't think, were the same as what they are today in terms of what we should be able to afford. And we all know that for those things that we can't afford, we can now have credit. In actual fact, I was flicking around and I came across the group called Credit Action, which are basically a group who are trying to help people avoid getting into debt. And they've got some very interesting statistics there. This is the annual growth of debt, if you like, in the UK per person. So in 1993, not per person in total, in 1993 there were £400 million worth of debt that people had, personal people had in the country. Now there is £1.4 trillion. And there are some interesting statistics. £1 million every 5 minutes is the increase in debt in this country. £330 million every day. Every household, including mortgages, has on average £56,000 worth of debt. Excluding mortgages, which I guess is the interesting one, is over £8,000 worth of debt on average. So if you think there's an awful lot of households without any personal debt on credit cards or whatever, those people have it, it is enormous. Another couple of statements that it made out there. Nationwide Building Society has basically done some research and found that teenagers aren't forgotten about here. Two-thirds of teenagers don't believe they've got a good knowledge of finance. And out of that, one in five teenagers don't think that having debt is a bad thing. And you know, I'm not trying to say that debt is something that means we covet or we are greedy, because in reality, if you're a student nowadays, it's virtually impossible, not impossible, but it's very difficult to leave university without some form of debt. In fact, it's actually gone down, it says here. The average debt that a student will leave university with now is £12,500, which is quite staggering, really. You know, the whole ethos of our country is now that you can borrow money to get things. And as I said, that isn't for me to sort of come out and say debt is a terrible thing, and if you've got debt, it's because you covet and everything else. But I think the picture is clear, isn't it? That we now live in a world where we want more and more stuff. And if we can't get that stuff, then we're willing to borrow money in order to get it. And it drives millions of people to debt that they can't afford. I thought it was quite interesting. There was some talk about us at Sortisford as part of our community initiative to get into debt counselling. And I thought it was interesting. You had to pay, was it £28,000 to actually get into it? So I thought about asking David if we could go to the bank and ask if we could take a loan so we could go and help with debt counselling, but probably something we're not going to be doing at the moment with that type of expenditure. And you know, when we're looking at the Ten Commandments, it's quite easy to get lost, isn't it, in the thou shalt or thou shalt not. You know, you can go off on your little guilt trips and feel that you must do this, I mustn't do that or whatever. But in actual fact, I think this evening I'd like to just concentrate on just a few things which are hopefully positive that we can take away, that actually thinks about the state of heart that God wants from us, as opposed to the legalistic things that we must and mustn't do. So we're going to look at three things. The first one is keeping our hearts in shape, then how we should adopt an attitude of gratitude, and how we should evaluate our priorities. And before I click onto this next slide, it says on my note here, government health warning. If you're squeamish, don't look too closely at this next slide, but it was a wonderful picture. You're all going to look now, aren't you? That there is the smallest ever heart transplant. The little boy was 5.5 kilograms when he had his heart transplant there. So anyway, that's the picture. The first way to finding lasting contentment is allow God and not the world to shape our hearts. I mean, that's clearly, as Christians, we know that. If we let the world shape our hearts, then it's going to drive us to wanting more and more. If we let God shape our hearts, then it's going to want us to drive us to want more and more of Him. And as I mentioned, in the fall, we all got our diseased hearts. We all need that heart transplant. Without a heart transplant, we will have no option. We will just go the way of the world. And there we have in Exodus chapter 36, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. It is only when we let God into our lives and we open up our hearts and say, Lord, I want you to take control over all that I have, all that I am, can we actually start the process of not wanting what the world wants, but wanting what God wants. And of course, once we've had the transplant, we need to live healthy lives. That's not just five a day or three shredded wheat or whatever it may be. As Christ pointed out, if we drink His living water, then we won't thirst again. There's been a book that Ian sort of circulated that J. John wrote called Living the Ten Commandments in the 21st Century. And quite honestly, I've used a lot of his material and what he says in this evening's talk. And one thing he says is, if we find ourselves thirsting for all sorts of things that the world offers, it may be that we're not drinking enough from Him. If we find ourselves thirsting for all sorts of things that the world is offering us, then maybe we're not drinking enough from Him. So the first way to avoid coveting and covetousness is to keep our heart in shape. Secondly, adopt an attitude of gratitude. That rhymes, isn't it? For a number of years, I at work had sort of about a dozen people working directly for me. And one time of the year that I must admit I really didn't like was pay rise time. And in our business, we have bonus time as well. It happens at the same time. So there's pay and there's some bonus as well. And one thing I've learnt through that process is that money is a demotivator. The number of times I'm told about the horrors of inflation or about market prices of, you know, we pay under market prices, or that someone's bonus isn't enough, although bonus in my mind was always a bonus, but, you know, to a lot of people a bonus is something that is a right. And, you know, sometimes that's true. But most of the time it is just people who haven't got a grateful heart, who are ungrateful. And personal experience is, you know, always be grateful when the pay packet comes through. Always thank, you know, whatever type of pay rise you get. And never go asking for pay increases. It's something I've lived by through my time at work, and I think it's just a good attitude to have, is just to not go begging for more money from people or whatever. And you know, if we have a lot or if we have little, we have to learn to be contented. Just as I think it says up there, Paul said, I have learnt the secret of being content in any situation, whether well fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. And when we get the discontented grumps with things, then we should maybe think about the following. Again, from the J. John book. First, you're alive. It's not a bad thing to be happy about. Secondly, we live in a beautiful world. And if you don't believe it, then go down to the Black Mountains. It's only an hour's drive away. And go and have a look at the beautiful world we live in. We live in one of the very few prosperous countries in the world. And we've got more freedom and security than, again, the majority of people. Almost certainly we've got family and friends who care for us, and most importantly and above all, God loves us and desires that we come to know Him more. We have a lot to be thankful for, and in order for us to avoid that attitude of wanting more, of greed, of getting upset with things because it's not fair, we've got to adopt that grateful attitude and thankful attitude for what we have been given. It's like the man who complained because he had no shoes and said he met the man with no feet. Finally, we should evaluate our priorities. On Friday, I was driving out of our drive, and there was a lady in the middle of the road, completely oblivious to everything, and completely oblivious to the fact that she was walking in the middle of the road, which I was trying to drive down. In fact, the only thing that had her attention at that particular moment in time was the SMS or the text that she was writing on her phone. And I can't judge on her priorities, because it may have been the most important text message she was ever going to send. But she was being rather complacent about the way that you treat a road, even if it was our own small little road out of our drive. And complacency is very dangerous. Jesus tells us that we've got to be on our guard against evolving into greed. And again, just some questions for us to think about. What do you like to think about most? When you're walking down the street, when you're at home, when you're lying in the bath, whatever, what things come into your mind? Is it that thing I'd really like to get next, that material thing? Or is it something maybe on a slightly higher plane? What do you talk about the most when you're with friends? What do you invest your time and energy in? I will admit, over the Christmas holiday, I got into the idea of setting up a little computer network at home, and I got called a geek, which really got on my nerves. But it was true. I had to admit that it was true. I got into the Maplin catalogue and such like, which is a terrible thing to do. And I spent a lot of time on that. And it was stupid, really, because there I was with family and I was spending time looking at the Maplin catalogue. It was so stupid. But, you know, where do we invest our time and our energy? What do we spend our money on? And is there anything that we would find hard to give up to save our closest friendships? And that's so important, isn't it? We so often think about things as opposed to people and opposed to relationships. So finally, and to close, we've heard the illustration before. In fact, I think we probably heard it a few weeks ago from the front here, but I thought it was a good illustration for this evening. You've, I think, heard of the frog illustration. If you haven't, if you put a frog into boiling water, the frog will jump out and it will run away. And yet if you put a frog into cold water and you switch on the heat and let the water gently warm up until it boils, the frog will sit there until it becomes frog's legs, I guess, or whatever they become. And that's an illustration for us, isn't it? You know, we know these things. And we know if big things come and hit us, if you like, we know that we shouldn't be touching them. But is that subtle way that the world tries to work in us and get us to a situation of greed, wanting more, wanting what the next person has got? So let's take this commandment to heart and not get boiled alive. If we could, I'd just like to sing before Cora comes and shares some testimony.